for a great Women's History Month event. For more information, go to WBAI.org. This is a benefit for WBAI, but no one will be turned away.
This is Linda Perry with WBAI News. Protesters burn a giant American flag in Midtown Manhattan outside Trump Tower. In Vermont, a flag is at half staff after it's announced that Trump won the election. Chants of "Not our president" are heard from coast to coast in inner cities and on college campuses. It was echoed when Donald Trump met with Barack Obama to begin the transfer of power. Students have walked out of their classes. A movement is growing to protest at Trump's presidential inauguration. This is the moment WBAI is needed now more than ever. The moment when activist radio in the middle of the FM dial at 99.5 FM and WBAI.org is needed. Go to Give to WBAI and become a member of this listener-sponsored non-commercial radio station. Not beholden to any corporate interests, not beholden to anyone except our listeners. Go to Give to WBAI.org and keep this listener-sponsored non-commercial station strong. This is our movement. This is our time to reject racist scapegoating, to defend immigrants and Muslims, to defend a woman's right to choose, to build working class solidarity, to build the grassroots movement against war and militarism. It's the time to fight for criminal justice reform and to be watchful over what happens with the Supreme Court and to fight for climate justice. Support this listener-sponsored grassroots activist station because it's needed, especially now. And thank you.
Don't tell me to stop. Tell the rain not to drop. Tell me everything I'm not. Don't tell me to stop.
Hi, this is Liz Wright. You're listening to WBAI in New York.
International Working Women's Day edition, where we are going to focus on Caribbean women and things Caribbean. First up, we're going to have Denise Chérifant. Denise is the current Director of Nursing at 1199 SEIU. Then we are going to bring the spotlight on immigration issues with the councilwoman, Yvette Clark from the 9th District in Brooklyn. And then we will move on to speak with two very lovely novelists. They're going to be appearing at a special Lit Fest at the Jamaican Consulate on March 31st. And we are going to find out a little bit more about them, their work, and all about this Lit Fest. All right, then. So we've got a little bit of time, so we're going to try to get in as much as we can. And our audio technician, Ife, we're all women here this evening and all day today. So just sit back, relax, and have a good time with us, okay? Now, we're going to meet Denise Chérifant. Denise, she has one of those wonderful immigrant stories that warms the heart and celebrate professional women all over the world. She hails from Guyana, the English-speaking country in the on the South American continent. But what is so striking about her is that despite her current professional status, she's very quick to tell you where her successes came from, her humble beginnings, and her hard-working, working-class parents. Denise has been a healthcare worker since early 1980s, And her first job was as a home care worker, then a certified nursing assistant. Then she was a physical therapy assistant and then a registered nurse. Denise wanted to go into nursing, but Denise is now the director at 1199 SEIU. We're going to find out a little bit more about that. But first, we want to hear about these humble beginnings that brought Denise to the United States. Denise, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Marilyn. Thank you for that wonderful introduction. I hope I can live up to that amazing introduction that you made. First of all, I just want to start by saying that everything you will hear about me first would not be possible without God and my Lord and Savior. So I want to first give thanks to God, and I want to, you know, give thanks to Jesus. And I want to say that, you know, in order, you know, after God, you know, next are my parents and definitely my mom, who has been a rock and definitely on whom I could, you know, count on for, you know, strength. My mom raised 8 children in Georgetown, Guyana, and at times our fathers was there, but not always. And she, you know, cleaned the public conveniences to make sure that we had food and, you know, but instilled in us great values, you know, and that is what has propelled me along the way. I am so happy today to be able to speak on behalf of women who are from Guyana and women who have sacrificed and worked hard to achieve their goals. I can't even say I'm about to be able to represent what they're all about, because these are phenomenal women, amazing
and
women.
So are you. So are you. At what point did you realize you wanted to go into nursing? What stage of your life? What influenced you? Was anybody in your family a nurse? Where did that come from?
I had 2 aunts who were both nurses, and that always encouraged me and inspired me. But I always knew that whatever I did, I wanted to take care of people, and you mentioned how I came up along the career path in healthcare, and I owe that very much in part to my mom, because one of the things that she instilled in us was that, you know, whatever you do, do it to the best of your ability. And in my career, I think I've worked hard, but a lot of things have happened simply because I had a good work ethic, and people will notice and then, you know, offer me, you know, well, here is another opportunity, or why don't you think about doing this? But nursing specifically was something that I knew that I wanted to do because I wanted to care for people. I didn't have the means without the support of the training fund, which I now work for, and I'm able to help other people achieve their dreams. So, you know,
yeah,
but
we,
I always
we're gonna
wanted
get,
to be
we're
a
gonna
nurse.
Get, yeah, we're going to get to that. But what I want to pivot to is that when we talk about nursing, as you said, you always wanted to take care of people. We always go directly to either a hospital, you know, we think in those terms, or a nursing home or some sort of facility. But here you are, you know, you're doing corporate nursing. Tell us about that transition. Were you more pleased now? Are you really looking forward to just working in a facility where you're taking care of people who are not well? This is a different kind of nursing. How is that experience different for you?
Well, thank you for guiding me in this direction. Yes, so I wanted to stay at the bedside as a nurse much longer. However, I had some health issues that kind of got in the way of me staying at the bedside longer. But being the fact that I was in healthcare for so many years, and I'd made some connections, I was given the opportunity at first to, you know, do more administrative type of nursing, care plans and other things. And then I was offered this opportunity to work with the training fund who supported my education. And I thought, what a great idea, what a great opportunity to be able to work and help develop programs that support other women and other immigrants who participate in our programs. You know, our programs are not exclusively for immigrants, but I would say probably a good
good percentage
or more of the people we serve are immigrants and first generation immigrants.
Wonderful. So tell us a little bit about yourself. What do you do when you're not nursing? And I know I must thank you very much for being on tonight, because I know you were traveling and you just landed, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that's
yes.
what your job entails, that you do quite a bit of travel.
Yeah, so I just got back from Arlington, Virginia, where we were in that area for the last 3 days, focusing on workforce development for healthcare and piloting apprenticeship programs in healthcare. So besides my work, I also sit on another board that's called the National Fund for Workforce Solutions that helps to look at workforce solutions for not only healthcare workers, my focus is on healthcare, but for different industries across the country. In terms of what I like to do when I'm not nursing, I like to volunteer a lot. So I also, one of the things that I do with my family is that we volunteer a couple times a month and we cook for the homeless and that's part of how I like to spend my time. I'm also doing some continuing my education and graduate work in nursing, so that keeps me busy as well, and I have a lovely grandson who also keeps me busy.
Wow.
So I have a lot going on to keep me busy.
Yeah, one of the things that I remember you telling me that when you said you like to cook for people is that you have that cooking pedigree in you. You said your dad had owned a restaurant,
yes.
And I think for a lot of Guyanese, probably West Indians will remember that he had this restaurant at the corner of that Crown.
Nostrin and Crown. It was called Tripe.
And he was called Tripe.
Yes.
Was that his real name? Because I think a lot of people know him by that name. But
yes, he's well recognized by that name. I'm fortunate to have shared, my dad was well recognized for his cooking, and my mom used to be one of the top runners in Guyana. And so her name was Jean Ritchie at the time, and she, was one of the top athletic women in the country at one point. So I'm proud to have parents who have very humble beginnings, but also who, made a name for themselves by doing things that they love.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on this evening, Denise. By the moment I met you, I think, and you were so down to earth and so open, I fell in love with your story immediately. And here it is, I had this opportunity to celebrate women on International Women's Day, and I could not have thought of a better person than you to share this evening and this story with me. So I thank you so much for coming on, giving us some of your time out of your busy day of travel and meetings and so on and so forth. And good luck to you along the way.
Thank you so much.
I really appreciate
the time. And I just want to take this opportunity once again to thank you, Marilyn, and to thank all of the women out there who have supported me along this path. I would not be here without them. And so I'm proud that we have today to celebrate Women's Day, and that I had this opportunity to represent women in any way. I'm really humbled, and I thank you very much for the opportunity.
The pleasure is all mine. Thank you, Denise.
All right. Take care.
Take care. Remind you that you're listening to a special edition of Home and Abroad, or the International Working Women's Day edition. I'm Angela Messiah, and we will continue in a minute with the Congresswoman from the 9th District in Brooklyn, New York, the Honorable Yvette Clark, and we'll have Citizen Christine Blackmore, anchoring this segment with me. She'll join me for this segment. And we'll first like to, one of the pivotal things that we're focusing on for the Caribbean community is the immigration. There's the healthcare bill that was just passed that people are a little confused about. And we have a couple of issues that are swirling around that people have been asking me to ask the Congresswoman about. So at this point, I should like to welcome the Congresswoman, the Honorable Yvette Clark from the 9th District in Brooklyn, New York. Welcome, Congresswoman.
Oh, thank you for having me, Angela.
Great. It's nice to have you on. We've got a couple of questions. We've got Christine Blackmore with us as well. Christine, are you there?
I am.
Great. So you're anchoring this segment with me. Congresswoman, you just came off of an immigration forum, I think, last Sunday at St. Stephen's Church. Christine was there as well, and there were a number of questions and a lot of issues that were being raised. People in the Caribbean community are very concerned about what's been happening, and there have been a lot of rumors of people are concerned that they don't want to open their doors, and there have been raids, and I've even heard some people saying, oh, they've taken all the gypsy cabs off the streets. They've marched these people to detention camps. Can you tell us what is happening at this point? What are you hearing? What are some of the complaints? And what should we be concerned about at this point?
Well, let me just say this. I think that, we have to take special care in our community because of the blended nature of our family, that we know the rights that we have as citizens, as residents, and as people who are undocumented. I've heard a number of rumors myself, many of which are unsubstantiated. However, we still have to be vigilant within our communities because clearly, among immigrant groups in the United States, we are most visible, being people of color from the Caribbean region and being of African descent in particular. I would encourage those who are concerned or those who have witnessed actual incidents to reach out to my office so that we can really get a true documentation on what is taking place. It has not been clear to me that there's been a significant uptick in activity in the 9th Congressional District. And so, I'm being very measured in my response. We have had conversation with the Department of Homeland Security, and many of the incidents that had initially been reported were unsubstantiated. There was no ICE activity, and I think that there's an overall fear because, when there are police checkpoints, local police checkpoints, people are attributing that to ICE. What we were able to do at our forum was to indicate exactly what ICE looks like. And oftentimes, ICE shows up, they're in unmarked vehicles, they're oftentimes in civilian clothing, with the exception of maybe a jacket that may have either an ICE insignia or the word police written on the back. But having said all of that, that creates a dynamic in the community that leaves particularly those who are undocumented extremely vulnerable because of the uncertainty that has come up around this. It has made it easier for scam artists to take advantage of people. While ICE officers oftentimes wear street clothes, remember that they can't ask for money. So if someone says they're from ICE but asks for money, they're probably not from ICE.
That's a good thing to note. So, Congresswoman, let me ask you something. Do you think, on the broader spectrum, with all of this immigration issues that are going on, will we ever be able to see an immigration bill come to fruition? What's your feeling?
You know, that's a very good question. There has begun some conversation within the Republican majority to look at sort of segments of immigration law that would benefit corporations, that would really be discriminatory in terms of selection of individuals based on wealth, education, and expertise, and by extension, regions of the world where certainly those individuals are privileged and have far more access to advanced education and degrees. There have been some discussions about being able to meet the needs of the tech sector through H-1B visas. So, you know, it's not the type of comprehensive legislation that we need to address the undocumented amongst us and to make sure that there's fairness and equity in the individuals who would want to come to the United States, either as residents or for employment opportunities and education. So the conversation has begun. I don't know that there will be a bipartisan approach to it because if the current climate here persists, nothing has been bipartisan. Everything has been sort of pushed onto the scene by the Republicans.
We noticed.
It will be a battle for comprehensive immigration reform.
Before we move on to health care, Christine, is there any question that's out there that you'd like to pose to the Congresswoman?
Well, actually, thank you, Congresswoman. I was there on Sunday, and you were phenomenal, as usual. And I wanted to thank you, and thank you, Angela, for having me as a part of this forum. Congresswoman, I remember when you were there, there was a skit, and I'm not sure if you'd arrived as yet, and there was a skit in which they depicted ICE coming to someone's door and telling them that they needed to open the door. And I'm not too sure whether many in our community know what to do when something like that happens. And I know that the focus was, do not open your door, remain silent, don't allow anyone to come into your home because you're actually giving them access to yourself if you open the door at any time. And also for those folks who may be having families there, they have to be very, very, very careful before opening the door. Now, I know that some of our in our community are very, very fearful. How do you think that we should teach each other so that we would know? Because we need to reach out to more of our constituents to let them know how to react if approached by anyone from ICE.
Yes, absolutely. Well, we all have the right to, first of all, remain silent when law enforcement is involved to begin with, and the right to counsel. However, there is a castle doctrine in the United States of America where if you're in your home, you have the right to ask the individual from law enforcement to present any documents to you by either leaving them under the door or in your mailbox. You do not have to open the door to anyone in law enforcement, particularly when, criminal activity has occurred. So people should know that immediately. They also have a right to counsel. So that you should always remain silent when questioned during an enforcement proceeding. And one of the things that is also very important to know is that particularly with immigration enforcement, while the officer may be looking for a particular individual, if there are other individuals who may be in some similar circumstances and being undocumented in the environment of the intended apprehension, all of those individuals become vulnerable to apprehension at the time of that enforcement. And that is why we're saying, given our blended families, it is very important to know your rights and not to expose those around us needlessly to the type of enforcement actions that the law gives latitude, particularly to immigration officers, to not expose our families to that. So it is important to know that if you're in your home, the Castle Doctrine does take effect, which means that you do not have to open the door to particularly immigration enforcement, not local NYPD. Uh-huh. There's a distinction.
Excellent point.
But that you should request, if they say they have a document for you, that the document be left so that it can be reviewed by an attorney.
Thank you.
And that also extends to your car as well. I didn't realize that.
Absolutely.
Ah, so if you're stopped,
yes.
Yeah, you stopped by a local police officer, he doesn't have a right.
No, that is specifically for ICE, for the Immigration Customs Enforcement.
Great
with
point.
The NYPD, there's a little bit of a difference in the procedures. You should always remain silent, and you should always request an attorney. But if you are under arrest, you are under arrest.
Okay. Point well made.
Before
you go, I just want to get in a little bit about this this healthcare bill that just came out. I want to know what you can tell us. I know there's panic going on right now in the Caribbean community among friends and colleagues and so on. What this new healthcare bill means? Some people are saying that gives employers, big employers, an option to opt out of covering regular employees, everyday employees. And everybody is panicking. They're saying, what do you think their choice is going to be?
It leaves in place some of the key provisions of the Affordable Care Act. However, it is a huge giveaway to the wealthiest in our country. It is a huge giveaway to insurance companies, and it really leaves vulnerable and leaves bare coverage for the working class, the working poor, and the those who really are the most vulnerable in our society in terms of accessing health care as we know it under the Affordable Care Act. It creates a dynamic where the Medicaid that has been responsible for taking care of our elderly in nursing homes becomes diminished, you know, over time, where those who are most susceptible to be without insurance are giving higher hurdles to jump over in order to really access the insurance they need to maintain their health and wellness. It's a horrible piece of legislation.
So what's going to happen, Congressman?
Out of the committee, we're in the midst of debating it as we speak. So people could actually catch the debate on C-SPAN of the Energy and Commerce Committee, because we are battling it out with these Republicans. You know, this is done out of pure malice, and we should not be treating the American people this way.
Make America great again. I don't envy you, Congresswoman. We follow the news every day on the Hill. I've never seen anything like this in my life before. I trust that people who decided to go for the shakeup in Washington are having some second thoughts about this, but we'd love to have you back again when there are more developments. I'll reach out to you. And
absolutely.
Thank you.
We're really in the beginning stages of this bill. They had hoped to be able to rush this legislation to the floor, but ironically enough, there is a lot of dissension among the ranks of the Republicans. They are not united behind this bill, which to me leads to its ultimate demise. But nonetheless, we're going to fight for the people.
Thank you.
Because this Affordable Care Act is really transforming lives. Women, children, and men in our community are benefiting tremendously from this groundbreaking piece of legislation, this new law, rather, the Affordable Care Act.
Thank you so much, Congresswoman Yvette Clark from the 9th Congressional District in Brooklyn, New York.
Thank you for having me, Angela, and enjoy the rest of the evening.
Pleasure is all mine. Christine, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
All right, bye-bye. This is our special International Working Women's Day edition, and we're going to wrap up our segment with two dynamic Jamaican authors who will also be participating in this year's Literary Salon and Art Exhibition scheduled for March 31st, 2017 at the Jamaican Consulate here in New York. We'd like to welcome Dion Pert, author of Somerset Grove. Dion was born in England to Jamaican parents. Dion, we'll give you a pass. And grew up in Canada. The Jamaican Gleaner described Dion's debut novel, Somerset Grove, as masterful. And Dion also practices law and is part of an organization, she's a literary ambassador, actually, for the Read Across Jamaica Foundation. She'll tell us a little bit about that, but let me introduce also Tilsa Wright. Tilsa, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Good night, one and all.
Good evening. All right, Tilsa and Dion. Dion, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about this literary salon and art exhibit that we're supposed to be attending on the 31st. Do you know anything about that, or that's going to be played by ear?
Well, we know a little bit about it. It's Jamaica's celebrating its 55th anniversary of independence this year, and so this event focuses on the accomplishments of Jamaicans in the humanities and artistic fields.
Uh-huh.
There will be three authors and a poet reading excerpts, and then there's also going to be some drumming, art exhibits, and jewelry on display. So we're looking forward to it.
So Somerset Grove Tell us a little bit about that. That's your current work?
Yes. So it's a novel that's set between Jamaica and Canada. It's a story of a family of three generations of Jamaican women in the Wright family. Each makes plans to leave their small town existence, and each one runs into obstacles that keeps her from living the life that she wants. So it's a story about complex family relationships and pride and that drive that we all have to prove ourselves worthy and deserving.
Great. So, Tilsa.
Yes, I'm here.
What's your most recent work? Is that Related Affairs? Is that it?
Actually, it's Lady in Red.
Uh-huh. Well, the Lady in Red seems like she has some problems about what we were just addressing, some immigration issues.
Actually, no, she doesn't. She's Spanish Jamaican. Her father is Spanish,
okay.
And her mom is Jamaican.
Okay,
born here in New York. So she doesn't have immigration issues. She just basically has. She grew up. She's from the poor class of the community of Bronx and Brooklyn, and she's struggling with the issues of trying to change her lifestyle. That's her struggle.
Okay. I thought I saw a little something there, but she was dealing with some other issues in the community where there was it drug-infested neighborhoods?
Or exactly, yes.
Her father and the brothers in the
Correct.
Drug world.
That's right. So she's trying to change her lifestyle from that and be more on the straight and narrow. However, she faces a lot of uphill battles.
That's a very real story. That happens to a lot of people. Tell me a little bit about yourself. What brought you to the arts and writing? What's your background? What did you want to do? Did you always want to do this?
It's been around the other creative folks for the past maybe more than 10 years now. What actually inspired Lady in Red is rapper Notorious, the late rapper Notorious B.I.G., who we will be celebrating his 20th year, that he has passed on. Tomorrow is going to be a big, big event, a number of events for the next couple of days, especially in Brooklyn. So, you know, while listening to his last album, the inspiration came for this project, trying to recreate that feel of the old Brooklyn in the hip hop urban culture.
Okay.
You know, that was the intent.
Mm-hmm.
But basically focusing on Keisha Lopez, and cause there are many females who grew up that time and is growing up now, basically going through that, trying to transition from, you know, not being in the right, on the right track per se.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what are you going to share with the audience at the literary salon?
Well, I'll be reading an excerpt from the book.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I'm currently working on a songbook project, you know, like a soundtrack.
Okay.
So I have a few artists who already recorded. I've assigned them a chapter, and they've written and recorded a song pertaining to the book, to the storyline. And so I might invite one of them to come out and do an acapella. I'm not too sure yet, based on the scheduling.
Great, sounds good. And now,
Dion,
could you tell us a little bit about what Read Across Jamaica is about?
It is a foundation that has a goal at promoting literacy and developing reading habits in young children. And you know, as people grow up, we need that very much. Yeah, as people grow up, they stop reading for enjoyment, and there's so many things other than enjoyment that you get out of just reading for pleasure. You learn empathy and how to, you know, analyze situations. And so the goal of the organization is to instill that love of reading in children. And so I think it's been close to 15 years, the organizer, the main organizer, Janice Wisdom, has been doing a yearly trip to Jamaica during Education Week in May. And so during the year, we do book drives and then go to Jamaica, and then there's an island-wide bus tour, and the ambassadors will visit the schools and engage in reading activities with the kids.
Right. So if we want to get a copy of Somerset Grove, can we get that from Amazon.com?
You can, as well as Barnes & Noble.
Barnes & Noble. And for Tilsa, Lady in Red, yes. Amazon.com?
Amazon and Kindle.
And Kindle. Thank you, ladies, very much. We are running short on time, but thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having us.
And we'll see you on the 31st. I'll look forward to meeting
Absolutely.
You on the 31st.
Yes,
I look forward to meeting you too.
All right. This is Angela Bisaya wrapping up another edition of Home and Abroad, International Working Women's Day 2017. Thank you so much to my charming engineer, Ife. And I shall see you. Hi to Cherie, and saying hi to Priscilla, and also to my lovely teammates, Fatima. Thank you so much for being who you are.
Celebrate International Working Women's Day with WBAI Radio, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org. Wednesday, March 8th, for 24 hours from 12 a.m. to midnight. In 1908, women marched to demand better pay, shorter working hours, end to child labor, and voting rights for women. In 2017, women are still marching and striking to demand change, respect, and equality. Women will speak to health, immigration, labor, and equal pay. Beyond that, the creativity, the music and spoken word, the love, the heart, the energy of women. Come to the Commons at 388 Atlantic Avenue to enjoy and network, listen to and perform at our live open mic from 2 to 4 p.m. and on the radio, WBAI 99.5 FM, WBAI.org, March 8th, 12 a.m. to midnight, International Working Women's Day.
The WBAI Feminist Film Festival is back. It's happening on Saturday, March 11th at the Brooklyn Commons with a showing of She's Beautiful When She's Angry, arguably the best film made on the birth of the modern feminist movement. One reviewer called it both an essential document and a wildly entertaining ride. It's all here, from the Miss America pageant protest to women integrating men's bars, to Witch, the women's international terrorist conspiracy from hell, and much more. Director Mary Doe will be present afterwards for discussion with guests and audience on the film and its relevance to where we are today. So join us on Saturday, March 11th at 7 p.m. at the Commons for a great Women's History Month event. For more information, go to WBAI.org. This is a benefit for WBAI, but no one will be turned away.
Hey, this is Chaka Khan, and you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
Today is a day of programming by, for, and about women. My name is Olivia Camus, and I'm a collective member of the biweekly radio hour here on WBAI-FM, Asia Pacific Forum. The International Women's Strike is a grassroots movement established by women from different parts of the world. To date, women of nearly 40 countries are included. International Women's Strike plans general strikes and protests for March 8, 2017 under the common call, Solidarity is Our Weapon. I spoke to Clementina Suchinow, the International Women's Strike organizer in Poland. She shares her thoughts on Poland's Black Monday, a successful strike waged in October of 2016 where thousands of women took to the streets and protested a proposed abortion ban. She discusses the lessons learned, Polish activism under an ultra-conservative government, and the impact of Western feminism on other parts of the world.
I think that first of all, it's introducing a solution for the future, because as long as feminism was called feminism and was closed somehow in certain circles groups, now feminism is being spread out. And women who, as I said, were allergic even to the word, they are familiarizing with it. And I wouldn't say they are becoming feminist, but they are realizing what how important it is for women to have some unity, protection among us, collaboration. And this international enterprise is something that's showing how by solidarity, but simple solidarity, without theories, without, you know, academic language, can work in real life. Because in Poland, for example, we know already that the problem of Polish feminism was the language. The language that was used was not reaching the people. There was something wrong about the formulations they used. It was not inclusive somehow. So now I think that it's the other way. The feminists should learn from women how to make feminists widely popular among young girls, and something that's as basic as human rights as anything else. We are enjoying today. As women, we are enjoying what our grandmothers did 100 years ago or in the beginning of the 20th century and through the 20th century. And if you can understand today that driving a car is a, you know, gained privilege, and you treat things that we are fighting for today as nothing, then you are going against your own daughters in the future and your own granddaughters in the future. You don't know what you're doing, what you're talking about. That's what would I say. But first of all, I would love. Yeah. Okay, the strike in Poland in October of last year is received in the world as successful. However, yeah, and in Polish it's also. However, we know our reality, and we know that what the government had to step out from is coming back in other forms under other projects in our parliament. And but fortunately, this mobilization of women, and it was really simple women. You couldn't believe the faces that we saw during the protest. It's not faces of people who are taking part in manifestations, and in many cases the protests were organized by people who never were engaged in any movement before, in any activities, and in any feminist groups. They didn't even know basic things about how to prepare a protest, how to be, because in Poland you need to go to police to register. So they learned in 1 week how to make it. And the thing is that it's so popular today to belong to it that, and we are so many that, and everywhere, because it happened in over 140, I think, 7 localizations in Poland, that with each new step that the government is making against us, we are only rising stronger and stronger.
better and better mobilized, better and better organized, and really getting ready for a real fight, because we know that we'll have to fight anyway. The one more strike, I mean, when I was looking at the march in Washington, I said, okay, it's very fine for you to sense that you are building a community and to see that you are so many. But, of course, there's no concrete result after such a march. You stay with the same situation as before. And now, yes, we are after one strike, but we feel that, in fact, we are, again, in the same place, in the same situation. So it's not something that changes after one action that's taken. It's going to be, going to take more time, I'm afraid.
Can you explain what solidarity is our weapon means?
There was a little bit of discussions about around solidarity is our weapon, because it's two things mixed together. Solidarity, which is a legendary unionist movement in Poland, which was a peaceful movement with a world weapon. But we feel that in our times, we feel being militant. Of course, we have no weapons, we have no armies, but they do. But what we can use against them and what they do not have is solidarity. Because ruling by orders is relying on obedience, but it's not building an engagement among people. So this is a combination of something between the past and our days, and also breaking this image of a woman who's... especially in Poland, women are not very... Women are used to fight since centuries because we had a harsh history, harsh times under different occupations. And in many cases, it was women who had to take care of everything in families, in of businesses. They even had to really physically fight. So we are not afraid of using such a word. However, I know that for some other countries, it was a kind of shock. But we agreed at the end that this is exactly what reflects our times and how we want to see it today. We are not asking for attention. We don't want to tell them what to do. We are not about to them to hear us. We are not about to fear them. And we are reversing, you see, the combination. We are not coming to be heard, to be listened. No, they need to listen to us. That's the way.
We also hear from Bangkok, Thailand, where Angela discusses the March 8th Family Planning Day of Action for Women.
As previous organizers of the Women's Sister March in Bangkok this past January, we wanted to once again provide a space for people of all nationalities that want to join in solidarity and stand together for women's rights in Thailand and the rights of women across the world. We stand in solidarity with all women. As people from many different backgrounds and nationalities, we raise our voices to put an end to gender violence, to ask for reproductive justice, to protect and demand labor rights. We also raise our voices in support of environmental justice, and we stand together for the rights of working women, women of color, Native women, disabled women, immigrant women, minority women, lesbian, queer, and trans women. In the spirit of solidarity and internationalism with women all over the world, Bangkok will be hosting a Day of Action event on March 8th at 11:30 in the morning. The event is going to be held at a restaurant called Cabbages and Condoms. This restaurant partners with a local nonprofit called Population and Community Development Association to promote a better understanding and acceptance of family planning. This Bangkok-based organization has also created effective change in the areas of family planning, HIV/AIDS, health, human rights promotion, among others. On March 8th, we hope that participants come together and share their vision and plan of action for a positive and inclusive future for all women. The day of the event, we're going to be asking participants to share their vision and plan of action in a creative way. We'll be having some basic art supplies, and then at the end of the day, we're going to gather what everybody made and put it together in a collage or mural so that we can keep it as a reminder of what it is that we're standing for on March 8th.
Last is Nusair Khan, the international women's strike organizer in Islamabad, Pakistan. He discusses the challenge with progressive organizing in the country, supporting feminist struggle, and what it means to be part of a global community.
Because there is a little, very minute, even 1% of 1%, you can say 1% of 1%, there is an infraction, and that feminist circle is also divided. They are divided in liberal and left and socialist divides. They are against each other, they do not collaborate with each other. But we actually agreed on organizing an event, open theater or artist type event, where there will be dance performances, there will be a play about public harassment and what should be its a solution. And this will be going to held in the Islamabad, the capital of Pakistan, in one of its main market. Like main interest came from the Trump versus Hillary Clinton elections, when they were, and as a result, a women march was held. So I had a keen eye on that events, and I came to know about the struggle that worldwide the women are getting together instead of their divides. Like on the world level, they are getting together, the working class women, the liberal women, and all the divide is not significant there. You cannot say that there is going to be happen, Pakistan is going to be a part of international women's strike. You can say that there is a voice in the sport of international women's strike. I believe in it is the time that we should stand with our international community. We should stand for equal rights, equal pay, and equal body rights for women. But they are it's difficult to have that kind of narrative in Pakistan, where there are religious, cultural, economic, health-wise. I dream of a society where I don't need to put a deliberate effort to keep my female family members safe. There should be no gender-defined roles. I want no, and there should be equal pay, equal rights. Like globally, there should be equal representation of women, and there should be no such gender discrimination overall. From the whole South Asia, even in China, there is going to be no protest in the in this region in the favor of this international women's strike. Mainly the people here in South Asia and East are very conservative. They do not associate themselves with international movements. So it is difficult to say what is going to I'm going to achieve on this on immediate terms or short terms. On locally, we are just trying to create an awareness for the feminism. We should continue our movement without any divide between ourselves. We have to cooperate with international community. We cannot live like in being separate from them. Even the whole world is a global village. Men and women is like two hands. You cannot give, cannot enjoy freedom by tying one hand and become making a slave. The women here are actually slaves.
I'm Olivia Canlis, a collective member of Asia Pacific Forum on WBAI on Mondays. Just then, you heard a collage of voices from international women's strike organizers from Poland, Thailand, and Pakistan. Joined by the theme of solidarity is our weapon, we heard how beautifully diverse and different the interpretation has been. Tune in later this evening after 10 p.m. to hear thoughtful perspectives from more international women's strike organizers in Thailand, National Strike Committee organizers from the West and East Coasts, Ivy Kicho and Susanna Deli, and last we'll hear sounds from the International Women's Day March in Los Angeles, California, organized and led by my own sisters at Affirm, a transnational feminist organization.
Hello, WBAI listeners and supporters. Tune in Monday, March 13th from 4 to 6 p.m. for the first report of 2017 from the WBAI Local Station Board. This month, you'll be introduced to the LSP officers and to the PNB directors. They'll talk about their responsibilities, recent developments throughout the network, and ask for your ideas on how to build a stronger WBAI. So mark that date on your calendar, Monday, March 13th, 4 to 6 p.m., the first report of 2017 from the WBAI Local Station Board, only on WBAI in New York, 99.5 on your FM dial, streaming at WBAI.org.
The WBAI Feminist Film Festival is back. It's happening on Saturday, March 11th at the Brooklyn Commons with a showing of She's Beautiful When She's Angry, arguably the best film made on the birth of the modern feminist movement. One reviewer called it both an essential document and a wildly entertaining ride. It's all here, from the Miss America pageant protest to women integrating men's bars to Witch, the women's international terrorist conspiracy from hell, and much more. Director Mary Doe will be present afterwards for discussion with guests and audience on the film and its relevance to where we are today. So join us on Saturday, March 11th at 7 p.m. at the Commons for a great Women's History Month event. For more information, go to WBAI.org. This is a benefit for WBAI, but no one will be turned away.
Hey, Next Karaoke at the Commons, a mini fundraiser for WBAI, is on Friday, March 17th at 7 p.m. at the Brooklyn Commons. And it's hosted by me, Earth Mom, and my very special guest host, Michael G. Haskins, your morning show host. Hey, morning man. Didn't know you were such a jazz aficionado.
Jazz? Earth Mom? Are you kidding? I live and breathe jazz. It's my religion. But we don't have just jazz. We have R&B, rock and roll, soul, hip-hop, folk, Broadway tunes.
Do we have rockabilly?
I don't know. But if somebody wants to sing a rockabilly tune, that's okay too. That's Friday, March 17th at 7 p.m. at the Commons, Brooklyn, 388 Atlantic Avenue. A $10 donation for WBAI. No one turned away.
Sing your heart out for WBAI.
Hey, this is Chaka Khan, and you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
Bring it here. I claim it. Tell you morning, noon, or day. but it's just funny. Till I get some time with you, nothing else will ever do. Funny.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Shay's Poetry Lounge. This is your host, Neo Soul. I am back after 6 years of a hiatus, and I am so happy to be back. So you are, oh gosh, this show is going to be good. We have tonight 3 special guests. I'll save the last one for last because she's very, very special. Right now, I want to begin this show by explaining a little bit about what Shay's Poetry Lounge is. I chose the name Shay's Poetry Lounge because a Shay's Lounge is where you go to your psychiatrist and you lay down and you tell your problems. So I figured, you know, why not name my show Shay's Poetry Lounge, because poetry is basically where you lay it down and tell all your problems. Mm-hmm. That's right. So although this show is produced by a woman, me, I have women guests, them, and there are women topics we will talk about. My show is not exclusively just about us ladies. We want to talk about things we're passionate about. We want to talk about our businesses, and we want to talk about the talents we have. So, with that being said, I want to sing your praises like the choir on Sunday, because one day I plan to make you my favorite song. Mm. I want to feel you like my hands will no longer hold you and console you, keeping you safe and protected from all harm. I want to taste every tidbit of all your good bits, because I crave your every portion with a good twist. I want to feel your name when it becomes too much to bear, filling hallways up with echoes of passionate affairs. You see, I want to take turns with you, sharing hearts where only we could survive on one beat. Refusing to stop living for both of us, you see, I want to seep into your existence without the least bit of resistance, giving you everything you've always wished for me. I hope you take my heart, because it is yours to keep. Be my light and shine bright, for I wish to see. Speak my truth with all convictions, baby, it's all of me. And when a verdict comes back, then you can sentence me. I am the beholder, I just wish they would have told you. It gets no better than this when I see us grow older. Yeah, beauty is beneath the layers I'll uncover. One by one, when you undress for me, cease in my mind when it wanders. Dance into your rhythms, bounce into your every beat. Stealing your soulful kisses only for me. Because I am the beholder, and I just want to show off the heights to where you take me and the lows before I fall. In love with this feeling, I can't seem to shake its hold. I'm breaking through your barriers and losing all self-control. Because, baby, what you do to me is apparent for you to see as I mirror all that you do. Because I am your reflection, like a master collection dealing in memories of only me and you. I want to possess your caress and relieve me of my stress and makes everything seem fine and make all kinds of sense. Be careful how you move. I'm all wrapped up and so confused, standing at a fork in the road, not knowing which I should choose. You've shown me what you could do, and now there's nothing left to prove. I wait for the moment for you to belong to me. I just hope the gods will have my back in this moment. At that, I am the beholder, and your beauty is all my eyes will see. And that poem I wrote for a brother, a good friend of mine from junior high school. And he asked me to write something that will convey his love to his lady. So this was dedicated to the ladies. I hope you guys enjoyed.
Yes.
With that being said, I want to introduce my guests for tonight. I want to give them a chance to introduce themselves and anything that they have going on as far as projects. Right now we have with us, I just want y'all to say hello before y'all start describing yourself. Just so we can get the introduction out the way. So right now we have Hidden Pain.
Yes, hello everyone.
We have my girl, Silent Celeb.
How y'all doing, folks? What's going on out there?
And in the back, the special guest for the night, Me Madre. If you could say hi and they could hear you, Ma, come close to the mic and say hi. Yeah, she's pretty much
how
a heavy.
How you doing, babe?
Oh, wow.
Mama gave the crazy seduction.
Mama hit y'all with the, y'all wasn't ready for that. Mama, I'm telling.
Okay, so if anybody wants to talk about whatever projects they have going on, or if you want to do a piece and
hit it, do what you do.
Well, I think I'll start off with a piece.
And I can only speak for myself, ladies, right now, but I have a problem with lust. Okay? I am a woman of God. I love the Lord, but I have a lustful spirit. Mm-hmm. I'm just keeping it real as possible. So this poem that I'm about to recite to you guys is called Breakthrough. It's going to speak for itself. The lies you fed me gave me a belly ache. The deception after your kiss left a bad aftertaste. This heaviness in my chest is causing palpitations. Oh, this heartache. I'm waiting to exhale. She's singing as we lay. Something has to give because I'm not with the three-way. The spirit of lust seduces and I can't think straight. This stronghold I can't let go. It's another love TKO and defiling my temple is not agreeing with the Holy Ghost. My mind is telling me no, my body is saying yes. It's a constant battle, a war between the spirit and the flesh. Fatal attraction, the enemy is using you as bait. Playing Russian roulette with my salvation, somebody pray and break these chains. And if he that findeth a wife findeth a good thing, then why am I asking you to buy me a ring? And something has to change before the Lord sends a plague and there's no antibiotics for. And if I continue the straight destruction I must face, and although God is my creator, he didn't create me this way. And I've been crying all week wondering, what should I do? My wailing women cry out for my breakthrough. That's my lustful, my
I know that's right.
My help me, sisters, help me pray. I'm tired of being lusty.
I know that is right. Let's talk about
cry
that.
Cry out for my
fact.
Breakthrough.
Let's talk out of being lusty.
Let's talk about that.
I need that on
funny.
A t-shirt.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm tired of being lusty. And then put like two lips in right? the middle. Let's talk about that. It was funny because I was online and they was talking about, you know, the equivalent to the male's, you know, problem that they have when they wake up in the morning.
Oh, that was me.
That was you.
That was my good morning post on Facebook, and it was a real legit question. The question was, if men wake up with morning erections, I can say that on air, right? Can I say that on air? If men wake up with morning erections, what do you call what women wake up? Like when we wake up moist or whatever.
Right.
The responses? Did you read some of the responses
yes,
on that post?
I did.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you actually
I need better friends.
I'm glad you put the, she put the link up about what it actually means.
Yeah, because some of the responses, I was just like, we should not be procreating as adults if we cannot give the proper.
Yes.
Some of the things that I heard, I was just like, yo, I need better friends. I need to interact with better people in my life.
Yes.
I'm praying for y'all though. I'm praying for y'all.
I forget what the legal name is, but I suggest you guys look it up because it's actually pretty much the male and female is equivalent.
Mm-hmm.
It's just different in the word that they pronounce because of the private part.
It's
a technical term for it,
A clitoral erection.
Yeah.
That's what's cool. Yeah. I really didn't know the answer to that. I just wanted to know what the answer was. And when I looked it up, but it was so many people answering. I was like, yeah, I'm done. Let me just look at something and Google it.
It's funny because listening to you now, but reading it earlier, I was going through my Facebook and I seen a lot of saltiness on my timeline from men.
All day.
And I'm not normally the feminist, you know, I don't go to marches. I don't like crowds like that. Mm-hmm. So you won't catch me out there with picket signs and everything. But the problem that I had was the fact that they thought that there wasn't an International Men's Day. And like I told the brother earlier,
if there is
a Women's Day, obviously there's a Men's Day. So all it takes is a chance to question it and Google, you know, and it's November 19th. But we're not talking about that right now. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to make that clear that there's always a polar opposite to something. So just reading the responses and knowing that there is a female equivalent to the morning problem, it kind of brings perspective to a lot of things. Speaking of, when it comes to that topic, as women, okay, do you ladies feel like you are oppressed in a sense because they claim it's a man's world, but little do men realize we are on a female planet. So at the end of the day, it's always Women's Day because you live on the planet. So do you feel oppressed by this?
I don't feel oppressed, but at the end of the day, not for nothing, if it wasn't for women, y'all wouldn't be here.
Hello.
When was the last time you seen a man carry a baby?
What, true.
No,
speak
that like, true. That's just real talk. I don't feel as though, because I want to make sure that I say this the correct way,
right.
Because we're live and I know that people are watching this and I'm going to get bashed for this. But I honestly didn't know about this Women's Day thing. I'm not going to lie to you.
No.
A very close friend of mine, one of my closest friends, Shayna, she inboxed me and she was stalking.